up, my name's Ben, and you're listening to File 27 of the YYY Files. This file belongs to not a local Stoke fan, but he's not a million miles away compared to some of the people that we've had on the podcast before. I know he's got some interesting stories to tell, both from his time growing up as a Stoke fan and a couple of stories now. I won't give too much away, I'll let us just sort of jump into it. How are you, Pete Manel?
I'm good, thank you, Ben. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Still in lockdown, of course.
Yeah, that's it.
So, not doing too bad, though. I've got a podcast to keep me busy.
That's it. How things like this are all the more important now. And I know a lot of people are really appreciating having something to be listening and enjoying beyond all the obvious news at the moment.
Oh, look, I just appreciate having something to do, you know? Like, if anybody else enjoys it, then, as I said before the show, all about it, but I'm just doing this to keep me sane. And as I also said before the show, like, I'm very grateful for people like you for coming on and sort of giving up your time and keeping me entertained for at least a few hours.
Yeah, no problem. Well, we're all very grateful to you doing it as well.
Oh, well, thank you, mate. I appreciate it very much. So, for those of you that don't know, the YYY Files are Stoke City stories, and they're told by you. Without people like Pete, the files just couldn't be possible. That's why I'm asking for you to come and share your story too. If you want to appear on the show, like Pete, and create your file, head to the website and click Create Your File. That's the YYYFiles.com, or on all social media at the YYYFiles, or email the YYYFiles@mail.com. I changed my catchphrase a little bit. All the links and stuff are in the description. Just because I'm fed up with the no caps, no dashes, no space catchphrase. I think after a year, I need to drop that one.
It's smooth now.
Yeah, exactly right. So, anyway, mate, we'll dive in. My first question, as always, why are you a Stoke fan? And I want to know from the beginning.
Well, I've obviously got a really original story in that it's my dad, really.
Way!
He was a Stoke fan, you know, especially as he went to college. And then I just never really knew any different growing up. We've touched on the fact that I live in Lichfield, so really it's kind of in Villa heartland. So to be a Stoke fan, although it was no other option for me other than to be a Stoke fan, it was kind of unusual in that environment. But if anything, that kind of heightened, you know, how keen I was to and my passion for Stoke.
It's a good point. So I wouldn't imagine that there's a horde of Stoke fans in Lichfield. How did that sort of come about for maybe your dad? Was that passed down through generations or?
No, not even through generations. My dad's actually a Wolves fan. But I think I think my dad went to college in Stoke, and he had a few mates you know, who went to Stoke games. He just started going along with them, and then he had a season ticket, you know, when I was very young, and it just grew and grew from there, really.
And we've heard all the stories, as you rightly said, about sort of how important your family is getting into football, and with you that's no different then.
Yeah, that's it. And it's kind of continued as we've gotten older. It's going to the Stoke games is quite an important thing for me, my dad, and my younger brother as well.
It's huge. I don't think we can make a big enough point about it, even though we try to on this show. It's just inheriting this routine of ours that we have, sort of burdening it on our offspring. And
burdening's the right word at times.
Yeah. Passing down the mantle, burdening, whatever you want to call it. So where did it all start for you then?
Well, a lot of my early memories, actually, maybe because, you know, we weren't all that local, were based not even being at the game. One of the things I remember quite prominently from my childhood was season review videos being on like a loop in the house. We had like a little VCR TV in our dining room, and I just used to watch them over and over. Like, you had Nigel Johnson on the show, and I used to just be able to quote him verbatim for like every single season of his playing, you know, Tranmere away and like Wrexham and all these teams back when, you know, I'm 26 now, I was born in 1993. So this would have been like the late 90s, you know, coming up to the early 2000s, when we were kind of innocuous, really, back then. Not many people had properly heard of us. And again, it kind of made it all the more special that I was watching these videos that were so different to anything else that was on TV in terms of the football. It's not anything you saw on Match of the Day. Nobody else would have heard of these players. That kind of became something really special and almost part of my identity, kind of growing up.
Is there a memory from those sort of DVDs? I mean, you said you could quote Nigel Johnson there. Is there anything that you could vividly recall back to us now?
Well, funny enough, I say about Nigel Johnson, but then a lot of the away games, they'd have the commentators from who would have been the home team. And local commentary is just absolutely fantastic. And having that recorded for posterity on like a season review. I remember there was a Tranmere away game that always used to make like my dad chuckle whenever he heard it, and since thinking back, it's always stuck in my mind. I think we had, or they had a player sent off, sorry, and the commentator, obviously very biased towards Tranmere, he was talking about the referee, and he said, oh, he's not only having a laugh, he's having a joke as well. It's just, what does that even mean? But that's kind of the beauty that lower league, you know, inverted commas, kind of captures.
Yeah, well, and I guess we're talking, I mean, you said late 90s, that we're getting on for 20 years ago now, that sort of content where
yeah,
commentary's changed, political correctness changed, everything like that, I suppose, is sort of, well, different now. Football's very different now.
Yeah, it's so different in many ways, but in a lot of ways, you know, the kind of the pure ways, it is still the same. You can still go down to non-league football and low-league football, and, you know, you watch the Quest on Quest, and some of the, you know, the little intricacies that make British football what it is, they still exist out there.
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, look at us and our identity and rituals and what our fan base is about and everything like that.
That's it, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about season reviews. As I said before, we're in lockdown at the moment, and Stoke themselves are releasing their sort of back catalogue of season review DVDs. And the only one I owned personally was 2010-11, which wasn't a bad one to have.
Oh, FA Cup,
I remember watching that back on loop. I'm surprised the DVD's not actually worn out yet. I've played it that many times.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of them VCR. So, like, having them in the proper box and stuff. They've since released a lot of them on DVD. So I think you can get them, you know, in the club shop going back a fair way. But, yeah, I think the season reviews kind of really capture the essence of a season. And a lot of ways that you can't in other media. So whenever we always used to, it used to be a big part of our routine at the end of a season, you know, we'd get really excited about the season review release date. And we'd go down to the ground and, you know, we'd drive home, me, my dad and my brother, and we'd sit and we'd watch that for, like, you know, the 2 hours or whatever. And it really captured all the memories and, like, the roller coaster ride of a season.
Captures everything, doesn't it? Like, technology and stuff. I mean, I'm thinking of these DVDs, and even sort of 10 years ago, I'm thinking of some of the graphics that we used on that DVD, and I think, Jesus Christ. And then I think, well, if we're talking late 90s, it must have been, I don't know, sort of boards held up in front of a camera or something like that. I don't know.
It is hilarious at the time, like the DVD menus and stuff now. But there's so much they could do with it. This is kind of something me and my brother, we talk about a lot. But the season reviews nowadays, I'm sure there are various restraints. And to be honest, I'm probably one of the only people who really looks forward to the season review, because a lot of it has kind of moved onto social media and it all comes out on YouTube now. But I think if proper time and investment was put into it, and I'm sure there are reasons why it can't be, then a season review could be amazing nowadays. You could fill it with, like, the interviews and all the behind the scenes stuff. And it could be a really quality kind of time capsule of any point in time.
Definitely. It's such a versatile tool, isn't it? Because, like, it's, I suppose, just something to watch, first and foremost. If you're bored, like, it genuinely is something, because you're emotionally attached to that thing. It's, like, automatically your favourite film, because it's your club. Particularly if it's a good season. It's a bit weird, because sort of, you know what's coming, especially if you were a fan at that time, for the most part, but you get to almost relive your memories through them.
The odd moment you do kind of forget about. And, you know, the goals and stuff that you wouldn't ever see the rest of your life. But when you sit down and you watch the season, you're like, oh, yeah, that, you know, Olifinjana goal away at weather. You're never going to see anywhere else. It's not the kind of stuff you can put on YouTube. But because you've kind of got it, and there's so many memories associated with that, it's a time capsule, I say again, not even really of just Stoke as a football club, but then I kind of associate my memories with those games and what was going on in my life at the time.
And of course, back when, maybe before you were going to games, these early season review DVDs were educational more than anything. Like, you must have learned a lot about Stoke and their recent history through those season reviews, right?
Oh, massively, yeah. All the players, and it kind of tied into, like, all the statistics behind it as well. And watching the season reviews, the only other thing that would be on would be Sky Sports News, like, constantly ticking over and rolling over the league tables and the top goal scorers, and just this endless cycle of news looking out for any snippet of Stoke being mentioned.
Like you said, I suppose, like, these days, you've got everything. You've got Twitter, you've got YouTube showing the highlights, you've got highlights being shown at the game, where I guess 20 years ago they may or may not have been, I don't know.
No, well, we had the big screen fitted in the corner, I think, in our first season of the Premier League on Boxing Day. Before that, we just had the little thin one. Yeah, there's no chance.
That's it. So these season review DVDs, because it's not as if you could Google the archives from the Sentinel and read back through all those stories, or get old newspapers or something, or unless your dad had programs or something. These season review DVDs, that was it, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I remember kind of similar story. I used to read a few football magazines when I was a kid, as I'm sure a lot of people did. And Shoot, I don't know if you remember that. I don't know if it's even still going today. At the back of the magazine, like every month, they'd have like a couple of pages devoted to each division, and there'd be a paragraph on like every team in the division. And it used to blow my mind that Stoke, for a paragraph, were being mentioned in this magazine that I could go and buy, like W.H. Smith. And it kind of, you know, it really hits home how different, like you say, it is now to then, and kind of where we were as a football club as well, to some extent.
Oh, yeah, massively. Like, if we're talking about, you know, being pleased at a little paragraph in a magazine, like, all the content these days, like, you'd be annoyed if we weren't on the internet somewhere, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's endless stream of content now.
Endless stream of content. Some people would say that's good, some people would say that's bad. I guess it depends on who you are and how Stoke are doing. I suppose if you were talking 2-3 years ago, some people would like a little bit less Stoke City content, as we've seen. But
there's some in for everyone content wise you know, you've got things like this that are very different. It's a niche, and it kind of folds more into that understanding what the Stoke identity is and people's memories. Then you've got the more mainstream stuff, the highlights, and I think the fact that there's so much is great, because it's just catering to what kind of everybody wants in some weird little capacity.
Well, exactly. I mean, if we're talking about sort of fan media stuff and relating that back to season review DVDs, like, I'm thinking there's a new series coming up on the podcast. I'll mention it a little bit later, but it's sort of going back through sort of Stoke City players and things like that.
Oh, great.
And one of the first ones is on James O'Connor. Now, I know nothing about James O'Connor, personally, nothing at all. And I thought, if that was me sort of 10, 20 years ago, say, and I was talking about a similar player that was sort of that far back, relatively, then I'd be thinking, how on earth would I learn about this player? I'd have to ask people, I'd have to watch a season review DVD or VHS or something like that, and just learn about them that way I can. Or can do what I did the other day, go on Wikipedia, go on YouTube, find FCFC Retro, that YouTube channel that makes fan edits at home, and within a couple of hours, you learn so much about a part of Stoke's history. And you're right, things have changed, and the fact that, well, if you thought maybe sort of 20 years ago, if you were ever seeing Stoke highlights, they would all be professional. But these days, yes, I guess the source of the highlights are professional, of course they are, but fans can manipulate that and do what they want with them. It's so easy. I mean, look at me, I'm recording a podcast in my bedroom, for goodness sake. And it's just so easy for fans to make content these days. I think on the whole that's a great thing, because fans have so many great ideas. The fact that it's just easy to turn them into reality now is just fantastic, where back then you were relying on a professional maybe who didn't have such a deep connection with Stoke to bring those ideas that he had to life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just, this podcast more than any, kind of really shows that. And having more fan-made stuff means that you can get really deep down into the more personal stuff about what being a Stoke fan is about and those personal memories. Whereas if it's not being made by a fan, maybe it is just a bit more clinical, a bit more about, you know, relaying whatever that story is quite factually or showing you the highlights. So yeah, I think definitely the more fan-made media, the better.
Yeah, I think so as well. We've celebrated that long into this podcast history. But let's do that, I suppose. Let's sort of dive into fan history and memories and stuff like that. And so you mentioned about these season review DVDs. I'm guessing you were watching them for a decent period of time before you actually started going to games then.
Well, I think my first game, I knew who the game was against, but I actually went and looked it up. You know, the internet again, all that it is. Yeah. I was probably about 6 or 7, and I think it was in the 99-2000 season. And it was a home game in the league, believe it or not, against Wrexham. And I think it was in the April. And we ended up winning 3-1 that day, 2 goals from Brynjar Gunnarsson. But the first goal I ever saw scored by Stoke was actually an own goal by a Wrexham player, who I had to go and look up his name.
Of course it was.
A man called Phil Hardy. I can kind of tribute to being the first goal I ever celebrated as a Stoke fan, which I'm sure he'd be honoured to know.
Honoured? never heard of Phil Hardy, bless him.
Yeah, quite a funny story, ironically, given the name. But when I was kind of the early games, we used to set up in the main stand. It was still in the Britannia, but we used to go to a lot of the Boxing Day games, the New Year, New Year's Day games. Yeah. And it felt like we used to play Preston every year. I don't know if any other fan would remember this, but the way it used to fall, we just used to seem to play Preston all the time. Yeah. And we used to take my granddad along, the same granddad I mentioned earlier, was a Wolves fan, actually. But, you know, he'd come along just as family and the football kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there was one Preston game in particular, Boxing Day or New Year, where we were 2-0 up at the time. And my granddad, he'd put a bet on that Stoke were going to win 2-1. So there we were, sat up in the main stand at Stoke in the upper tier. And Preston get like a late corner or something, and the ball comes in. And they actually end up pulling a goal back late on, so it's not really going to have, you know, much of an impact on the scoreline. But my granddad's there in the Stoke end, jumping up and down.
Because, yeah, I can see that coming.
He's had his bet coming. Oh, jeez.
Oh, brilliant. I could just imagine him celebrating, and then them going, "Oi, what's going on?" And you going, "Oh, it's all right, he's a Wolves fan." And you're like, "What? What? Yeah, what?"
I'm celebrating a Preston goal in the Stoke end.
This clears up nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but then kind of another big memory of those early games was, I don't know if you remember, we used to have the Newcastle Town friendlies.
Right, yes, yes.
Yeah, each summer. And being sat like on the banks, it always used to seem really different experience of Stoke and football, because it was a lot more intimate. And it used to seem like a scorching hot day, every single Newcastle Town friendly. And you just felt a bit more of a connection with the players, because, you know, they were there and they were warming up, and you'd kind of see them leaving, going to their cars and stuff after the game. So, yeah, those three, really, the Wrexham game, the Boxing Day, New Year games, and then those Newcastle Town friendlies were my first really strong memories of going to Stoke.
And how did sort of your relationship with Stoke change then, from watching them on DVDs and, I guess, learning about them, getting some sort of attachment to them, and then sort of going to games, seeing the guys that you were watching on DVDs, seeing them get into their cars, I suppose, and realise they're actually human beings and not performing monkeys.
Yeah, that's it. I think it just drove the passion even further, really. You know, I was just all the more keen to end up going. I didn't get a season ticket till I was about 13 or 14. It was actually the promotion season. I had my first season ticket, which was, you know, a pretty good time to get one on the whole. But the more I was going, the more I found that passion just being driven further and further and further. And then I was, you know, I had like my first kit when I was 6 or 7 years old, but then I wanted to get a kit like every season. And, you know, I'd be one of those kids who'd be keen to wear the full kit. I won't describe what a lot of people describe that as, because, you know, I was like 8 or 9 years old. But yeah, I'd want to be wearing like my full Stoke kit every kind of non-uniform day we had at school. And the more I went to games, the kind of the bigger that got. And in a way, we've mentioned living in Lichfield, the fact that everyone else around me, like all of my good friends were Villa fans or whatever, kind of drove it even more. It kind of felt even more personal to me and something special and unique that I had going on.
It's that sort of feeling of you're fighting your own corner in a way.
Oh, big time. And especially like the early years getting up into the Premier League. We had some great games against Villa that I'll talk about as some of my best Stoke memories on the whole. But yeah, it was very much a kind of that underdog mentality.
I actually just want to bring that back a little bit, if you don't mind. So we've not actually talked about on this podcast, we talked about all of the time, sort of promotion, Europe, Wembley, Stoke alone, what have you. But we've not actually gone that deep in the sort of years before that. All those times where we'd nearly made it through the playoffs and then finally got there. The switch between the Icelandics and Coates, and then eventually getting promoted to the Premier League, of course.
Yep.
What are your memories of that sort of time? Because for me, I wasn't even a Stoke fan then. My knowledge of that period is nil, pretty much.
Yeah, there's a few, really. I remember a few games we had, like, in the FA Cup. We played Arsenal in the FA Cup in maybe 2002, 2003, something like that, at Highbury it was. And I remember watching that, and again, it goes back to that feeling of watching Stoke, like my little Stoke who had a paragraph in Shoot magazine, playing against Thierry Henry and Patrick Vieira. It just like blew my little mind. And I think Wayne Thomas put his 1-0 up. We were wearing like a silver away kit, and I can still see him. I think it might have been a televised game. I can still see him kind of running back towards the Stoke end with like his arm aloft, and players like Adi Akinbaye kind of chasing along behind him. And then we had a similar game around the same kind of time. We had home to Chelsea in the FA Cup. And Eidegger Johnson, who obviously would end up going on to play for Stoke. Yeah, players like Eidegger Johnson and Jesper Gronkjaer, and maybe if young Frank Lampard, maybe even before he was at Chelsea. But kind of seeing those players playing against Stoke was pretty mind-blowing. But the general sense of being a Stoke fan at the time was just of kind of bouncing a little bit. You mentioned, you know, the Icelanders coming in and the optimism that brought at the time, that maybe this would be something a little bit of cautious optimism in terms of we don't really know what we're getting here. Foreign ownership maybe wasn't as prominent as it is now, but there was a sense that maybe we could get something special going here. And then There was the kind of the breakdown with Pulis when he first came back in. Then we had that Johan Boskamp season. I don't know how much you remember that.
See, me personally, none at all. And I know that a few people listening would, like, are younger than me. I just won't have a clue. So feel free to chat about that.
We went from Pulis was brought in by the Icelanders to keep us up in what is now the Championship. And he kept us up like on the last day with a win over Reading. Adi Akinbaye, mentioned already, scored like a header in the second half that kept us up. And then Pulis was, I can't remember the exact reasons, but there was a falling out, I think. You know what Pulis is like, as much as I love him. And the Icelanders brought in Johan Boskamp from Dutch football. And he was big, affable, like jolly, total football kind of Dutch manager. And we had one season where we'd had Pulis before playing this binary style football where the scores were 1-0, 0-0, 1-1. We had a record number of games where the scoreline was, you know, 1 or 0. And then Boskamp came in and it was this total football. And, you know, we were, one week we'd win a game 3-0, 4-1 or something. And then the next week we'd go and lose 3-2. It was unbelievable. And then Coates came back and straight away cleared the slate again, brought Pulis back in. And then it was more a sense of kind of building again through that really careful football, you know, defensively minded, which I loved in many ways. But yeah, it was an interesting time to be a Stoke fan, that kind of mid-2000s, when we went through that transition of Pulis to Boskamp and the Icelanders and then back to Pulis again. But I can go back even further, really, to when we were in the playoffs trying to get up to the Championship itself. And one of my earliest Stoke heroes was Peter Fawn. And I think a lot of it at the time being, you know, the age I was the fact that he shared my first name. But he was he was quite a talismanic figure for us, isn't he? I think he's the most recent striker we've had, really. He's gotten close to 30 goals in a season. And we were, as you say, we kind of made the playoffs a couple of times. We had a couple of heartbreaks. I remember us losing to Warsaw. And it wasn't like you could be, you know, watching a stream of the game back then. They used to do the beam back every now and then at the Brit, where you could go along and they'd have like the game being shown. But a lot of it I remember listening to just on the radio in the car. Like, we couldn't get signal in the house, living in Lichfield, and maybe just our range. We used to have to go sit in the car to listen to the games. So there was Warsaw and there was Gillingham in the playoffs as well, where we had a couple of players sent off in the second leg. And it was just frustrating that every year we didn't seem to be making that progress. And then we did eventually get up with Gudjon Fordarson, and we beat Brentford in the playoff final with Peter Handyside, my next favourite Stoke player. Again, a Peter, funnily enough. So yeah, and then follows on to what I was talking about before, really, with the Pulis years. I've kind of not really done that in a very good chronological order. Just kind of spewed out random memories.
I think that's what this podcast is becoming famous for, just sort of spewing thoughts out. But people seem to like it, so we'll go with it. Those memories then. So you said, like, in Lichfield, like, you barely couldn't get signal for the radio. And this was at a time where Twitter wasn't a thing, so you can't check the live scores. There was no DAB radio, so you can't just log on online and listen to the game wherever you are in the world. Like, you must have learned about all this stuff not live, I suppose, whether it was sort of secondhand or whether you were, again, watching these DVDs or stories from your dad or something like that. It must have been a weird time to have been a football fan. Forget Stoke fan, but being a football fan, not being from the local area, must have been quite difficult then.
Yeah, it was weird. And I mean, you know, we didn't get we don't get the Sentinel newspaper in Stoke, so, you know, you wouldn't have that come out or anything.
No.
And I remember things like when Peter Fawn was sold to Cardiff. I remember hearing about that, and I cried at the time, you know, as a child. But it's not like I would have been able to, you know, just see online and have heard the rumours that was impending or something. That probably did just come out of the blue for me, because we didn't have all these, you know, social media outlets and stuff. I probably saw it on Sky Sports News the first time, but even then it was probably just flashed up at the bottom, like in one of those little banners for like 5 seconds or something like that. Like you say, you know, it just wasn't the same media output, especially on someone like Stoke. But I don't really remember the transition and it changing, to be honest. It just kind of, maybe it tied in a lot with us growing as well as a club. So they kind of went hand in hand, and it was hard to tell whether it was media growing or whether it was us as a football club growing.
I just think we sort of grew at the perfect time in football. Something happened in football where I think if we hadn't got promoted to the Premier League when we did, we might not have never got it. I know that a lot of people say, like, we almost didn't deserve to go up. It was a bit of a surprise for us to go up, and then an even bigger surprise to have stayed up. But football was changing at such rapid speed at that time. We talk about transfer fees, you were on about media there, just access to everything was just exponentially growing with the internet and things like digital radio and being able to read newspapers online. You mentioned all of that, even sort of fan media coming to some extent. We talk about sort of fanzines and things like that. It all just happened at the perfect time, I think, anyway.
Yeah, you use the word I would use, really, exponential. It did just kind of explode and take off, and I think you're right, really. I think everything kind of came together at once. It's a beautiful miracle for us to get promoted when we did. Hopefully it'll happen again.
Oh, well, yeah, hopefully so. I mean, I guess we're in a state of flux with football now. We don't know what state it's going to be if and when we get back to it. Like, is it going to be behind closed doors? Able to watch it at all? Is there not going to be games for a year? Like, we just haven't got a clue at the moment. I mean, hello, when this podcast is an extra year into the future and we're listening back because football's cancelled. But
say that.
Well, who knows now? Everything just clicked. Like, we're talking about sort of, we were breaking sort of transfer fees season after season after season. I guess that's not necessary. Like, we were ambitious at that point, don't get me wrong. We were an ambitious club to have got promoted and stayed up and pushed for Europe and things like that. But that's just because football was changing. I remember I used to sort of cringe at seeing Raheem Sterling going for 50 million quid. And I look back now and think, it's nothing. Like, there's some players that have been touted to go for 200 plus.
Yeah, yeah, and it does just keep growing, I'm sure. You know, once we're kind of back on an even keel, I do think it will just keep going on that trajectory. There's part of me hopes that maybe this is a bit of a wake-up call for football, as hopefully it will be for a lot of parts of society. But yeah, as an industry, it's very driven by capital and finance, unfortunately. And I can't really see how that bubble will burst if it's not going to burst in these kind of circumstances.
You wouldn't have thought so. I mean, whether rules are imposed or whatever, I don't pretend to know about anything that goes on into the future on this podcast. That's why we stick to what we are best talking about, and that's what's already happened. So sort of going back to that then, your time as a Stoke fan, as we got promoted to the Premier League, must have changed. Like, we mentioned access, we mentioned coverage. We wouldn't have been happy with just a paragraph in a magazine anymore. We were becoming a, dare I whisper it, we were becoming a big club.
Whoa. Hold your horses, yeah. I remember the Bolton game. I was down in Devon at the time, like summer holidays kind of thing, and all the newspapers coming out, and I just wanted to read all of them because they'd have like the Premier League season previews, and there'd be like half a page, like a whole column on Stoke and, you know, our prospects. Of course, a lot of it predicting that we go down. And then we lost that first game against Bolton, but I remember watching a live stream of that on my laptop.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly, which now is obviously just the norm. And then even though we'd lost, this is the big one, really. I remember being so excited to sit down in the lounge, you know, on holiday in Devon, and waiting for Match of the Day to start, to see Stoke on Match of the Day. And it was little things like the old Match of the Day titles. I remember one of them, my favourite one growing up, used to be from the stadiums, like an aerial view. And they're like kind of zooming out on them to the surrounding landscape and imagining Stoke like on the Match of the Day title sequence, and then having like Gary Lineker and stuff talking about us. And there's a quote my dad said that always stuck in my mind that kind of sums up that time period, really, or certainly the feeling as we went into that first season, that I'd rather be last on Match of the Day than not be on it at all. It kind of sums it up, and that excitement about seeing Stoke, you know, given that little bit more of media attention was just unbelievable at the time.
I've said this anyway, that Stoke haven't always done well with attention or expectation on them. Like, we've always done better when we were expected to do badly or we were underdogs. And back in those early Premier League days, we were certainly that. No one expected us to stay up. We were paid out on to go down. It just suited us.
Definitely. And a lot of people, I remember on the Oatcake at the time, some people used to really resent kind of the negative media attention we get. And that first season in the Premier League, we were promoted with Hull and West Brom. And Hull, I don't know if you remember, had like a blinding start to the season. They were up in like the Champions League places around Christmas. And the media were absolutely fawning all over them. They had like this Giovanni, this Brazilian. And it used to drive me mad. Yeah. Like, as a Stoke fan, thinking, oh, you know, we're doing well and I'm so proud of us. but the media are just giving a whole all this lavishing attention on them kind of thing. But yeah, we were tarnished with this underdog mentality that used to, on the OK, used to annoy a lot of people. But at the same time, it kind of brought us all closer together. And I know I've heard stories about Pulis putting up, you know, newspaper snippets in the dressing room. And you mentioned, like, that bookmaker, I won't say the name to give them the publicity, but that bookmaker paying out on us being relegated, you know, the team and the fans kind of used that to build our identity at the time and drive us on just to say, you know, stuff you, we can do this. We're here by merit and we're going to survive whatever anybody thinks playing football that is going to work for us.
You mentioned about the fans there sort of getting behind the team, and that, and it's an understatement. Just we were a massive reason, the players have said, why we stayed up. Don't get me wrong, they were brave, they fought hard, they were skillful, some of them. Like, we didn't just stay up on ground hard passion. We stayed up because we scored some good goals and had some good defenders and played very well some games.
We had Rory's long throw.
We had Rory's long throw. And God, just the atmosphere inside that stadium. And that's sort of what I'm coming on to. Just things for like a Rory to like throw. Like, yes, it was a spectacle. Like, seeing a man hurl a ball 40 yards at that flat trajectory straight into the hands of a goalkeeper and he just couldn't control it, and seeing it go into the back of net would send any crowd mental.
What I would give for like one game to like take myself back to be in like that stand again. I remember in our promotion season, we played Newcastle in the FA Cup in the third round, and it was like a night game, I think it was televised and everything. And I remember being like, I was 15 or something at the time, and the concourse and everything being buzzing, and you know, there being chant stuff on the concourse and a sellout stadium. And I distinctly remember thinking at the time, is this what it'd be like if we got up? Yeah. Is this what it'd be like every other week coming down here? And it surpassed all expectations. It was unbelievable at the time. It was so special.
Oh, that's it. And we were rewarded for our loyalty and our commitment to the club, sure. But we were the loudest fans in England. And like, like that's just a title, I know. But it's just sort of testament just to how good we were and how much of a buzz that must have given those players and just the club as a whole. Like, we were gaining this identity piece by piece. Rory Delap's long throws, big hard, cold, wet, windy night in Stoke, and
yeah, just like it all fed in together, didn't it?
Yeah, nobody wanted to come to us. And like, we talk about identity and stuff and how we've either got or lost that over time, but like, we've mentioned how the club's become successful because they have an identity, whether it's tiki-taka or whether it's total football or whether it's just being not very nice to play against, and that was us.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like I say, what I'd give just to go back and experience like a pre-Rory Delap crowd buzz. People would be like bang on the perspex at the back, and I remember that. I don't know if I remember this wrong, but people used to do like the American Indian, like, you know, whoa, 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 and all this. I don't know if I've completely made that up in my head somewhere, but just the build up before those throws was unbelievable. It could be near the halfway line, and just the crowd would pulse and it'd grow, and oh, what memories.
And that's it. Like, it became infectious, and that really was the sort of time where I became a Stoke fan. It's because I went down to the game. I wasn't a football fan, neither was my dad, but we both went down, and you can't not get excited by that. And I don't know how regular by this point you were going to games. I don't know whether you had a season ticket or you're still going occasionally, but it must have deepened everything for you and for your family that were going down too.
Yeah, that's it. My first season ticket was in the promotion season. I feel a bit guilty really saying it.
Well,
I guess I tagged on just as we were getting successful. It's not like my first season ticket was, you know, the first Premier League year or anything, but there's a degree of guilt surrounding that in a way. You know, I feel weird as like a 26-year-old guy talking about, you know, the good old days, whereas a lot of people had to wait so much longer than I did and would have appreciated it probably a lot more. But you know, it's all about personal stories, I suppose. But you say, yeah, it did just deepened it all the more, really, going to the games every other week and the crowd, the atmosphere, and just that sense that at home, you know, we were capable of beating anybody, and we did beat anybody.
And what was that like with you, your dad, and your brother then? Your connection between yourselves must have got even stronger as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was actually at a time when my mum and dad had not long broken up. So kind of going to the games with my dad and my younger brother, it kind of took on even more significance. It was that shared experience that we had, you know, brought us all the closer. It was that time we spent and we shared those memories together, and it was that place away from, you know, anything else that was going on with school at the time. I was doing GCSEs, A levels, all that kind of thing, and yeah, you just build memories together. And even thinking about this podcast, I've been talking to my little brother a lot about it, and it's kind of bringing back those shared experiences we had, and it does bring you closer to people.
Oh, 100%. And it was lucky that during that time, you said it was difficult, that you had this release every other weekend, and by God, it was a good release.
Must
have had some bloody good times. Like, over the last sort of 10 years or so, what's been the highlights from that?
I put down in my notes, like, the first season of the Prem as a whole, but I think the two games against Villa kind of sum up the most nicely, especially being from Literal, and like my friends being Villa fans. There was this sense of, I remember one of my kind of guys I knew who were playing football used to say that they were going for the Champions League and we were going for the Championship kind of thing. You know, we were going in opposite directions. And of course, we ended up drawing them in the first home game of the season.
Yeah.
And that whole game, like, Fuller's unbelievable Bergkamp-esque turn over Larsson and that finish. And then, of course, you know, 2-2, I remember thinking, like, oh, you know, that's great. I can take that. I can hold my head up pretty high. I can go back to the Villa fans at school. But then for Mama, from a Roy Delap long throw to score that late lick on, unbelievable. And then the away game, again, having lots of Villa fan friends, actually went along with my dad to the away game. And we sat in the Villa end. We were directly opposite the Stoke fans. And we were terrible that first half. We were 2-0 down. John Carew had scored like a world-class goal early in the second half, like, you know, killed the game off, and we were just dead and buried. And I was sitting there, like, oh, you know, shrinking into my seat. Villa were going up towards the Champions League place at the time. And then Fuller came on and just changed the game completely. And we ended up, as you know, everyone will know now, scoring two late goals. It was that late Whelan drive from the edge of the box. And I can still picture it now, Whelan running over to the Stoke fans. We were in the yellow away kit. The Stoke end opposite going crazy. And I was just sat on my hands. desperately trying not to celebrate. And we were with these Villa fans. I looked over at this Villa fan mate of mine. His face just, you know, completely dropped. And we drove them back to Lichfield after the game. And, you know, we were very modest about it. We didn't rub it in their faces. We dropped them off. We drove around the corner out of sight of the house. My dad stopped the car, pulled over. And then just got out of the car and was running laps around the car celebrating. You're letting this release that he had to hold in for, you know, a good couple of hours of what was just an unbelievable game, and kind of surmises really that sense of the underdog and being in Lichfield and being surrounded by these Villa fans. And, you know, we're Stoke, and, you know, we are a good team, and we do have that identity, and we all keep fighting until the end.
Oh, 100%. And for you, that being even more sweeter with some sort of local rivalry from afar, if that makes some sort of weird sense. Like, that's something that I've sort of had myself in a way. So I've been moving across certain parts of the Midlands-ish area for the last couple of years. So I've lived in Loughborough, where there was a lot of Leicester fans, and I've lived in Liverpool, where there's obviously a lot of Liverpool and Everton fans. Now in Nuneaton, where there's a lot of Birmingham, Villa, even sort of Coventry fans are sort of breathing down their necks now with them looking to get promoted. And these weird little rivalries you pick up for no tangible reason apart from, like, you just happen to know somebody, and all of a sudden you sort of have this irrational hatred for this other team, and you're like, why? Like, they've not done anything particularly bad. It's not like Arsenal or something, or West Ham, where they've stolen some of our players. You dislike Villa just because, like, your mate likes him. Like, it's weird, isn't it?
Every single game, you know, there's probably a good portion of fans who, for them, that's like their biggest game of the season. They'll have, like, in-laws or whoever, or mates and stuff, or people they work with who support that team. And I guess that kind of feeds into the personal experiences everybody has of Stoke within, like, that collective shared one.
For me, like, if Coventry get promoted, I just so hope we beat them. I just so hope we beat Cov, because it's going to make so many people I know unhappy.
I remember the last time we played them was Hughes' last game, I think, wasn't it? In the FA Cup when they beat us.
Yeah, pretty much. Do with a little bit of a redemption against Coventry.
I'm sure it'll come.
going to be weird for Lewis, who is on the podcast, if Coventry does get promoted, because, of course, he's a fan of both. So,
Well, he can't lose then, can he?
Well, I think with Stoke, you can definitely lose either way.
But yeah, those Villa games were definitely one of the big, really strong memories from those early days.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And then, of course, we've had so many good times sort of since then, and we became less and less of an underdog over time before moving into a period where people were starting to sit up and take notice, and people will argue that that's what eventually killed us off in the end. But we weren't just becoming some plucky little underdog that was doing well to stay in the Premier League. We were pushing for European football through league position.
Yeah. Well, one of the other kind of big memories I have from that period, and it ties into, like you say, developing as a club, were the transfer deadline days back then.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember they used to be, nowadays they're like 5 o'clock or something. Back then you'd have 11 p.m. ones at midnight, transfer deadline days. And under Pulis, we always used to wait for the apples to drop, and we always used to leave our business really late. And we had so many really exciting transfer deadline days. And I think they were so special because they were so imbued with that sense of progress that we were always adding that missing piece, that like next step that we needed to kind of push on and develop as a team. So I remember that before the FA Cup season, we signed Pennant, Mark Wilson and Idiger Johnson on transfer deadline day. And then, you know, we had the one with Crouch, Jerome and Palacios. And like I say, it was just sitting there watching Sky Sports News and pressing F5 on the oatcake for any news from... There was a guy called... A post called Dave's Views. I don't know if you remember him.
No. Oh, my God. Dave's Views. That's the first time he's got a mention on this podcast. He's a legend. Yeah. Oh, my God. Dave. If your name is Dave, I don't know. If you listen... If you're listening, come on this bloody show and talk about that, because like, oh my God, Dave Hughes is such a throwback. Like, he used to know everything, and yet some people say that he knows nothing, and yet things would happen and then it didn't happen. Oh my God. Yeah,
it summed up those transfer deadline days and stuff, didn't it? And just sitting there pressing F5, and like you say, some people really believed him. I think I was a bit of a believer, to be honest, and I'd wait with bated breath for him to come on and, you know, give these really cryptic clues about a midfielder who once played in Spain and whose mum, you know, shops at Tesco, might be signing for his 8 p.m. on so and so day. But he was, a lot of the time, he was quite accurate. It's just, you know, great fun at the time.
Oh, hilarious. And like you talked about transfer deadline day, so Peter Crouch was the big one for me. Like, for me, sort of becoming a Stoke fan, like, it was a player I'd heard of that wasn't a Stoke player. It was massive for me. And I remember I was on holiday in Devon, I think, with my family. Was it Devon or Cornwall or something similar like that, down south? And I was sat in this little cottage. We didn't have Sky or anything like that, and no real means of watching transfer deadline day. So I don't know what I was doing, whether I was looking at social media. I don't know whether that was really the time for news like that at some point. It might have been the oatcake. I don't know what it was, but there were just these rumours going around, and I remember sitting on the beach with no signal and, like, had Peter Crouch signed, and no idea. And it was getting towards 11 o'clock, and I was thinking, because these deadline days always used to finish on the 31st of August. My birthday is on the 1st of September. So,
no way.
Yeah, there'd always be that little crossover of, like, I'd wait up to see the end of transfer deadline day, and then it'd be my birthday in, like, another hour. And it was like, in the end, Peter Crouch signed as... this like birthday present.
What a gift, the gift of Crouch.
I know, right? And then of course we got Wilson Palacios in the deal as well, and like, well, it's a shame we didn't keep the receipt for him. But
I remember being really excited about Palacios signing.
I know, me too.
He was like the bigger signing. He'd had such a good couple of seasons at Spurs and like Wigan before that, and he felt like that Whelan upgrade that we never got, or maybe we never even really needed at the time. But yeah, so excited at the time.
Really, really strange time to be a Stoke fan. That was like, we were signing some players that were bigger names than the club, some would argue, and like you talk about Idiger Johnson, Michael Owen, and just like these players were massive. Wilson Palacios, you mentioned as well, and just like they fizzled out at Stoke. Like we were getting to a point where we were bigger and better than they were. Like I guess you talked about watching Idiger Johnson play for Chelsea as a younger Stoke fan.
Yeah,
you must have thought, even though Idiger Johnson obviously got older and things like that, and Michael Owen, but you never thought that Stoke could be saying, we're better than playing Heidegger Johnson up front.
I'm shaking my head now. I'm trying to connect. I remember doing it at the time. Trying to connect with like my little 6 and 7 year old self. The prospect of us having like Peter Crouch or Michael Owen or Heidegger Johnson playing up front for us. Like my earliest football memories was the 2002 World Cup and seeing like these England players like Michael Owen and stuff. Thinking that one day, not only would Michael Owen play for Stoke, but we'd have a player play for England at the time that he was also at Stoke.
Yeah.
In Shawcross, even if it was just that one game, but that would have blown my mind back then. I would have been so proud. And it's because, you know, going back to what we said at the start of the podcast, Stoke just felt so separate to the rest of football. It felt like a little niche down in Division One where we were just limited to those little paragraphs and magazines, and just how we grew and grew and grew. And we, like you say, we caught up and we overtook some of these names to an extent. More than anything, really, that kind of sums up our progress.
Yeah, 100%. And then we were signing the likes of Jordan Shaqiri and Bojan and Steven Nzonzi, and these players were just, I mean, if I ever see them again in my lifetime, it'll be wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But
better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all.
Of course, of course. Like, I mean, how many times have we talked about Bojan and Marko Arnautović on this podcast? It's just, thank God we had that period. Thank God we rode that wave for just as long as we did.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's just my mum coming in from work down there. Hi, mum. Oh. You alright? Oh, bloody hell. Podcasting at its finest. I was hoping this would start after being a year in, but there we go.
This is lockdown podcast.
Oh, hey, forget lockdown podcast. This doesn't get a studio when things get back up and running, mate. This is how it is all the time. Oh, dear. We mentioned players there, quite a lot of them. Now, I know, just from talking to you beforehand a little bit on this podcast, that you've had a couple of experiences with players through quite a bizarre way, really.
Yeah, well, we had a bit of a kind of a family friend, really, who's one of the Sky Sports News presenters. Back at the time, it was kind of during our promotion season in early Premier League years. So I actually went and did my work experience when I was at school with him. So I went along to, you know, a good week or two travelling around the Midlands. And I remember the first one we did was with Frank Quidrew. I don't know if you remember him, Birmingham player. When I met him, Alex McLeish, I remember meeting. But then, there was a couple of times when it was Stoke. So I went along and I was at the training ground the week of Thomas Sorensen's trial for the club. I remember him being in the car and he knew this Crashless News presenter I was with like really well. So he came over and he shook our hands. And I met Pulis then as well. I was like out on the training ground and I shook his hand, and you know, the guy I was with introduced me as like a massive Stoke fan. And just that starstruck awe of like shaking Pulis's hand and kind of seeing him as like a real person who's just kind of there and, you know, just doing his job, kind of brought it all home. But then the biggest one really was the Arsenal home game in the first season. My dad got a text off this guy and said, oh, you know, would Pete want to come along for the Arsenal game? I'm doing the coverage for it. And I was, yeah, of course. So for that Arsenal game, like before the game, I was in and all around like the changing rooms. And I remember holding the door open for Andy Griffin and him not thanking me. And at the time, at the time, that like really irked me, like having something against Andy Griffin for ages because of that. And then we went and watched the second half down from pitch side, like in the corner at the Boven end, like where we were attacking. And I remember seeing Olafinjana's goal go in, like just in front of me, and then coming over and celebrating, like in the corner next to me. It was just unbelievable. Thinking back, being that close to those kind of memories.
Yeah.
But then there's a couple more slightly more cringy ones.
Oh, go on.
Danny Higginbottom bringing out his book. I don't know if you read it. You know, good read, really. And he did a book signing down in the club shop before one of the games a few years ago.
Okay.
And I went down. I wanted to get it signed, like, for my dad. So I went down and I met him. I queued up and I got to the front of the queue. And he signed it and said, oh, you know, thanks for buying the book. And for some reason, this came into my head. And I look back now and it just sounds so cringy. I don't know if it'll sound cringy to, like, you listening. But I said... So he said, thank you, Pete, or, you know, thank you for buying this book. And I said, no, Danny, thank you. And I was like, oh, God. I went back up to Delilah's to my dad and my brother, and I was like, oh, God, why did I say that? Like, he's probably sitting there like, that's a bit weird.
No, like, I guess it depends on how you said it. If there was that big, long, dramatic pause in the middle, then maybe.
I remember thinking, oh, that's just one of the most embarrassing things anyone's ever done.
I don't think I can save you there in that case. It was like, oh no, thank you, thank you. Like, no, thank you. Thank you. Like,
thank you. Oh, God. For all the memories. Okay. Yeah. There's a couple more random like encounters with players. I remember as a kid, going to the meet the players thing up in the Delilahs at the time, and meeting like Jurgen van Deurs and having my picture with him. I don't know if you know the name. He was a player in like early 2000s kind of thing. And then the Newcastle Town games I mentioned. I remember walking away from that and Peter Hoekstra driving by and giving my dad the thumbs up, and my dad being convinced that moment on that he was like his best mate. And he like never shut up about it because Peter Hoekstra gave him a thumbs up. There was meeting Bojan at Stoke train station as well. It was a highlight.
I've heard a story about this before. I think did George tell us one? Yeah, like, oh, so many players are met, like fans at Stoke train station. Like what happens? Like,
well, I think if it had been most players, I wouldn't have gone over. But being Bojan, I'll talk about him when I do about 11. Bit of a spoiler there, really. But me and my little brother were at the train station. I remember looking over and thinking, oh, that guy there looks like Moritz Bauer. And then people started coming up to me, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's Moritz Bauer. And then I looked back again, and I turned to Will, my brother, and went, oh, my God, it's Bojan. Bojan was there with me, and I was like, we've got to go over. I can't not. the chance of meeting Bojan. So I went over and just said, oh, you know, excuse me, Bojan. Tried to be as polite as I could. Didn't want to bother him too much. But I had this photo with Bojan. And didn't even really have a proper conversation with him or anything, but he came across as a, you know, very polite, very genuine kind of guy, just waiting for his train with Moritz Bauer.
They're actually human. Like, it's a nice reminder sometimes.
Yeah, that's it. You see bits on social media that kind of brings that home every now and then, I guess. Walter's put up on Instagram the other day. It'd been like, I can't remember how many years since he scored that goal against Chelsea in his first season. And then Bojan commented on that. Like, oh, mi amigo.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, my heart. Like, I know. Bojan talking on Instagram. Like, Charlie Adam commented and stuff. And it is nice to see that more personal side of them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, it's nice that they're all friends as well. You know, like, of course they will be because they play football with each other. And it's like any job, I suppose, you're bound to. But, like, there's so many players that talk about Stoke. I know some players will do it for social media clicks or whatever, but like, there's so many players, and I'm sure we'll go on about this later, but there's so many that just love Stoke. Like,
yeah, and ended up living here.
Exactly.
Or living in Stoke, I should say.
What a weird little club we are, but God, some people seem to love us. I guess we're all weird, aren't we?
That's it, yeah, all in our weird little way.
One more thing before we move on to the Files FC then, I think. You mentioned to me before about sort of memorabilia. Now, I know that some of this was sort of related to the story you were just telling, but again, do you want to just run us through that?
Yeah, well, probably the most notable one really is I've got Thomas Sorensen's gloves from that Arsenal game. I think I got them like a month or two later. You know, this guy, such news guy, sent them down to us, and I still got them somewhere, and they've kind of gone all yellow and crusty, but they're like this white Nike pair, and they've got Sorensen, you know, across like the strap of the gloves, and just I remember holding them and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, and even watching like the season review DVD back, thinking those gloves that he's wearing, and you know, when he picked up that ball and Van Persie got sent off, they're these gloves that, you know, kind of got in my hands now. That's quite a special little bit of memorabilia.
Oh my heart.
yeah. There's a couple of different ones that aren't so related to that, but you know, I treasure just as much. Don't think we've mentioned yet in this podcast, but I'm a teacher. So I moved schools fairly recently, and I left a class that I taught for a couple of years, and they actually had been my first class that I'd ever taught, and I had like quite a special affinity with them, and they were leaving primary school as well, and I was like leaving the school, so it was like this big celebration really of everyone kind of moving on, and all the parents kind of pitched in and got me next season's home shirt with like my name and stuff on the back.
Oh, bless.
Yeah. So that's quite a treasured piece of memorabilia in a way, really, that's quite personal to me, and you know, kind of means a lot.
Well, yeah, I bet it will, because like, there's nothing particularly special about it particularly, because like, it's just a home shirt with your name on the back, but it's from people you've spent a lot of time with over the last year, I suppose, and of course it's bound to mean a lot to you. I think it's nice when memorabilia sometimes isn't necessarily special because of what it is itself, it's just because of the story behind it and what it means to people, like one man's trash and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's it. Everyone's kind of got that little story about, you know, a random shirt or something. Or yeah, it's just individual and personal to them, isn't it? And that makes it more special in many ways.
Well, exactly. And I mean, if we're talking about individual and personal, I guess we really can move on to the files I've seen now.
Hey, smooth transition there.
Smooth. I am working on him. I do try my best. I do try my segues the best. Nice. Anyway, Pete, this is your ultimate Stoke team of past and present. Ideally, this is one goalkeeper and then two each of centre-back, full-back, midfielder, winger and striker. As we mentioned before, pretty much half the people have broken the rules, so don't worry if it's not that. That's absolutely fine. But if you could give a reason for each player that you vote in, that's great. Anyone that is included in the main team gets a vote towards the main Files FC, which can be found on the website. You can nominate some substitutes as honourable mentions if you want to, but of course they don't get attributed votes towards that main team that I was just talking about. So I've got my notepad ready. Starting with goalkeeper, away you go, please, mate.
Yeah, it took a lot of thought, really. And the 11 I've kind of picked more based on my affinity and my connection to them.
Yes.
So they'd probably be beaten by a team made up of more skilled players. There's teams I've left out who people might be like, oh, you know, surely he's better than having him on the wing or whatever. But this is the side I'm most proud of as a Stoke fan, and who, if I could go back in time and watch these players. Oh. So in goal, I've gone for Tommy Sorensen.
Of course you have.
Yeah, just because, you know, what a period where he was our number one goalkeeper. We brought him in, having him had a trial, and I remember we were linked with like Scott Carson and Martin Fullup and stuff at the time, and then Tommy came along, and he was unbelievable those first few seasons in that FA Cup run, saving a couple of penalties along the way, and he was just a top guy as well. You know, I talk about like the gloves, and he sent my little brother once sent him a message asking like a goalkeeping tip. You know, he wanted to be a goalkeeper when he grew up, and Sorensen sent back like this framed photo of him with like a, you know, personal message, like giving him some hints and stuff. So he just came across like a really nice guy. So yeah, he's definitely my number one pick and goal. Moving on to right back.
Okay.
There's probably one player who sums up us in that time period more than any other is Andy Wilkinson.
Yes.
So I can picture him. It was a Blackburn game. He'd gone down, and even from the stands, you know, I sat up in the booth, and you could see like blood trickling down his forehead. And he just got up, he just stood up, and, you know, Dave Watson, the physio, is there trying to like bandage his head. But just like the roar from like the ground is just, he's bleeding for the cause, and he's still standing up, even as the physio is trying to bandage him, and, you know, he's just wants to get back involved. He summed us up more than any other player. And he never did score that goal. He came close a couple of times. I know he got that penalty in the testimonial, but, oh, if he'd scored, I remember one against Portsmouth in the league where he beat a couple of players. Unbelievable.
I remember Wembley. Agonising. Like,
kind of stumbled, didn't he?
I mean, even that touch went to Walters to score for five, and that's brilliant, but like, he was so close, and for him to fall over as well, just like, can you imagine if we were 0-0 at that point?
Score an 80th minute winner or something. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then moving on to centre-back, I've got first one, I've got Shawcross.
Yeah.
The pride when he got called up for England, I've already mentioned. And just having a player, I was discussing this with my younger brother yesterday, I don't know if there'd be a player in Stoke's history, probably going to be proved wrong, who's captained us more than Shawcross has. He's been our captain for over a decade through some fantastic times, and then now, you know, for a bit of a dip. And I just hope for anyone, no one really more than him, that we kind of have a bit of a rise again and he leads us in some capacity, because what a career he's had for us.
Yeah, I hope he comes back in some way, shape or form. Well, we talked about he might even be a manager one day, and imagine if he plays his son for Stoke, like, it, oh, God.
Yeah, he's in the academy, isn't he? Keep the legacy going. And then alongside Shawcross, I was torn between two. I was torn between Abdoulaye, because I think it's easy to forget how immense he was in that first season in the Premier League. He was just an absolute beast. Like, he was our player of the season in that first Premier League season. But I've ended up going with Hoof.
Okay.
Because I think the Shawcross and Hoof combination was just such a symbol of the time again, really. And his no-nonsense, hilarious at times, partnership with Shawcross. You know, he just didn't used to take anything from anybody. He'd just step across a player. And, you know, I remember him swinging at Matthew Upson from a corner, to being there like bleeding and stuff.
Yeah.
And what a player he was as well.
Yeah.
You know, he scored a few decent goals for us, a few deflected free kicks. I remember he just used to, if we had a free kick from a distance out, Hoof would take it and just smack it towards goal.
Yeah.
You'd just have a deflection off like a Wigan player in the wall or something like that. Yeah, two goals in that FA Cup run, of course.
Yeah.
You know, you got the winner away at Wolves, and then he scored against West Ham in the quarterfinal. So, yeah, hoof and Shawcross at centre back.
Well, he scored against Bolton as well.
Oh, of course, yeah. Three goals in the FA Cup run, yeah.
Big player.
Yeah, their left back. we know that we've never really been blessed with what many would term a proper left back. And there's a couple of players who, you know, I toyed with. But I've ended up going with Danny Higginbottom.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned the book signing story, but there's so many, like, Danny Higginbottom had such a defined way of playing, probably because he was a centre-back, shifted into left-back. He was a deceptively good player, but every time he'd have the ball shifted over to him, you knew that cross-field diagonal ball was coming.
Yeah.
Up in the movement, and, you know, in the first half was attacking the away, and you'd see it, like, the perfect arc on it over towards Mama or whoever it was at the time. And I remember him, you know, there's some more skilled memories with him as well. I remember him scoring that penalty in the first Premier League season against Tottenham with the ball rolling off the penalty.
Yeah.
And then obviously the free kick against West Ham.
Oh my God. Just
what a
beautiful
moment.
What a moment.
Yeah. We had the free kick was moved forward, wasn't it, for a handball?
Mm.
And then him smashing it and Shawcross and Hoof pulling the wall apart. Oh, yeah. So yeah, Higginbottom at left back.
Yeah.
Two central midfielders. The first one I've gone for is Glenn Whelan.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to replace Glenn Whelan so many times. We brought in Wilson Palacios. We spent so much money trying to replace Glenn Whelan. And, you know, there's so many seasons where we'd start with Whelan on the bench. But we'd reach a point, you know, normally by around November, December, and you'd look at the team sheet and, oh, Whelan's back in.
God damn it, he's here again. We can't get rid of him yet.
But then he'd have, like, a great game and he'd just be solid. And you'd be like, you know, Whelan had a good game, didn't he? Yeah, he just got on with it. And then he'd just be in for the rest of the season. And that happened, you know, for years and years. And you talk about, like, that period where we had Bojan and Arnautovic and Shaqiri. Whelan was still playing for all of that. You know, he was alongside Nzonzi there. He was still doing that same consistent job that a lot of players couldn't do. He just kept it ticking over. He was tidy. He did the work that goes unnoticed a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then alongside Whelan, I've had to go for Delap.
Yeah.
Again, he just comes across as such a nice guy, really. He's a great symbol for the club. He really represents us really well. Obviously we got the long throw, but he was a lot more than that. He was a good player, you know, in his own right. He was skillful. He used to get the ball moving in midfield. He scored a couple of decent goals. I remember away at Wolves. I remember the Chelsea goal away where we ended up losing late on, but a little dink over Cech. And the biggest memory I have of Delap beyond the throw-ins is that Tottenham game where he scored the winner. We went 2-1 up and him celebrating in the net. Holding on to the netting and, like, you know, just that passion and stuff from him. So him and Whelan alongside one another, what a hard working and pure football central midfield that is. And then I've got two players, one who is a natural winger and then one who probably wouldn't be so keen in playing this position. He's probably more of a striker typically. So on the left hand side, I've gone for Matty Everington. When we signed him in that first Premier League season, he was that touch of quality that we really needed. Going into that January, we were struggling. We were in the relegation zone. And he came in, and he did transform us. He was that little bit of guile that we needed. He set up some important goals for BT, and he represented really that dog's home kind of period where we're bringing in those kind of players like him and Pennant, which other clubs had kind of rejected or they'd fallen on hard times, and we kind of helped reinvigorate, and they had a great period with us. And Everington, for a couple of seasons, like in the FA Cup run, was unbelievable. He was close to an England call-up at the time. So yeah, Everington on the left. And then on the right is the player I've mentioned who we'd probably rather be playing up front, but played on the right a lot for us, is John Walters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the same kind of reasons I put people like Whelan and Delap in there, but what a hard-working player we had on our hands with Walters. And I remember when we were first linked with him, and I remember seeing the rumour that we were linked with John Walters again and thinking, oh, surely we've moved past some fella from Ipswich. He wasn't like the marquee kind of sign we wanted, but, oh, gosh, was I proven wrong.
Yeah.
Not only he was strong, he was good in the air, but, again, he scored some great goals, that Bolton goal, the Chelsea goal. And and even into the period where we had Bojan, etc., he was such a foil for him as well. I think he was a deceptively good player, John Walters, and, unbelievable hero and stalwart of the time. And then I've got two players, I say up front, one would be playing a little bit deeper. I think you can probably tell already who this one's going to be. I've got Bojan playing just behind, really. I had a bit of an unhealthy obsession with Bojan at the time. The way he glided around the pitch, like when we first signed him. And there was that Arsenal game where we went 3-0 up and he had a goal disallowed.
4-0 up. I know.
Yeah, I remember my dad turning to me and saying, you know, enjoy him while he's here. He's a special player. He was just unlike anything we'd seen before. And then he had his injury, obviously. But then he came back after that. And I think people forget how quality a player he was still even then.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
In that Bojan Arnautovic Shaqiri trifecta, he was still really effective and he was still scoring some good goals. And I don't know if we'll ever really be able to put our hand on exactly why it was that he fell away under different managers.
Absolutely. And you touched on it there. Like, we not really talked about the was he better before or after his injury debate, I suppose. Yeah, for me, I wouldn't say he was just as good. He was still a very special player after his injury for me. And the fact that we didn't include him more is to our detriment. But I can see why, with his history with Barcelona and sort of slowly coming down the ranks, as it were, from his initial expectation, he's talked about his sort of mental health and how he's dealt with that over time. And then the injury, like, I'm sure half of us listening to this podcast have had injuries in sport before, and it's not made us the same player. It doesn't necessarily make you a worse player, but I think you could see that Bojan was a little bit more cautious, maybe. I still think he was a fantastic player with great vision and wonderful skill, and still scored some great goals. But I can imagine that if he saw this big centre back or someone coming in for a massive challenge, he would be careful, and I can understand that to some extent. I do think he changed his game a little bit, but I don't why we didn't include him. Only he and the club will know, I think, because it made sense to us, I think, to at least persist with him.
I think he became a victim of his own success in a weird way, in that the fans loved him so much. Managers, I remember Rowett, almost seemed to resent the fact that he was like a fan's favourite. And there was a bit of that kind of became one of the sticking points that led to Rowett's falling out with the fans and him going.
Yeah, oh yeah. That's why Rowett left, as you said. That interview with Bojan, about Bojan rather, the next game, it was from that point, the fans just completely turned on Rowett, bless him. And Rowett will have learned a lot from that, I think.
Bojan. People will remember him for a fantastic player before his injury, but he was still a great player afterwards, to sum him up, really.
Yes.
And then last player up front, there was only one man I was ever really going to go for, and that's Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he really stood up in that promotion season and the first couple of years in the Premier League. He was our talismanic quality player up front, and our whole system of playing under Pulis was so based on Fuller, like, running the channels and getting the ball in behind him to chase and win a throw-in or win a corner. And there's little moments of skill and quality that he provided that nobody, a club of our level, could have a player who could do those different things. Some of those goals, they drop off the tongue, like the Villa one and that West Ham one away and the Birmingham one at home and the Wolves one away in the promotion season. He scored so many big, important goals. And what character as well. Like, some of the stories you hear about him, it's just hilarious. So Fuller, possibly my all-time favourite player.
No, what do you think?
Possibly, yeah. He was ours, wasn't he? He was special.
Oh, for years. He was our little secret, I think. The world of football didn't really appreciate just how quite good he was. He didn't get enough recognition outside of Stoke for me.
That's the 11, but I think it is anyway, if I've counted correctly. And I've got a few players on the bench.
Okay.
You know, just a little bit of a mention. There was Begovic. I think what a top goalkeeper he was, and scoring that goal. My little brother didn't make that game. He was on like a school trip. So I texted him just Begovic, !! And I remember him like talking to me after the game. I was on the phone to him and he was like, I had no idea what you meant. If you just send a goalkeeper's name, you're going to assume they've given away a penalty.
What a save!
Yeah, exactly. And then he looked up and to see that Begovic had scored. Wow, unbelievable.
Oh, man.
I had to put Abdoulaye Faye, you know, I've mentioned him. Got to put him on the bench somewhere. Charlie Adam, I think he scored some fantastic goals for us. The goal away at Chelsea, I was in a bar in Vienna with a friend watching that with some Chelsea fans.
Nice.
That moment when the ball like sailed over, I can't remember if it was Czech or Courtois or whoever it was at the time, unbelievable. Liam Lawrence, similar reasons to Rick, really kind of dragged us up with some really massive goals and performances. Mama, Fuller's foil, really. You can't have Fuller without Mama, and you can't have Mama without Fuller, Sidibe. Yeah, yeah. And then Peter Thorne, my first Stoke hero. Peter Crouch as well. And I thought about going with a striking Peter trifecta of sneaking Peter Odemwingie in there as well. Because of the time when, you know, he was quite a special player for us. He had a season and a half or so where he was loved by the fans, and his song about Kenwyn Jones going, "I won't sing for obvious reasons," but...
Man, you go for it, mate. That, like,
I could have gone on for hours. The bench, the 50, 60 players long.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like, the players you mentioned there, like, so many fans that have come on this podcast have named those players, and it's definitely for a reason. Like, we've had some fantastic players over the years, as we've mentioned, but just some of them, legend gets sort of tossed around. I mean, a couple of those written in, you know, like, Stoke City folklore for the next few decades, certainly. Like, they're not getting forgotten, are they? And all of those players sort of, in one shape or form, I guess, played with each other pretty much, especially in the main team anyway. You know, it's all from that great era. Like, you said you were fans from, like, the late 1990s, but, like, there we go. Like, they're all from that era. And, like, there was there was someone on social media, actually, today. So this is recorded just after I've released the birthday special. I put out the Files FC as it currently is. Well, I suppose it's 26 episodes, but 27 teams went out because Rupert and Simon Gough both had one each. And someone said, "Where's all the older players in there? Like, you must not be getting some of the older fans on." And I goes, "You're right, there's a lot of sort of younger fans that come on this podcast because of the nature of it. But even some of the older generation of fan will name these players just because that time in the Premier League we mentioned was just so special."
Yeah, that's it. Success kind of breeds people's memories, doesn't it? And their affinity with the players. You know, I've got a couple of players in there. I've got Peter Thorne, for example, who's a personal one to me. But for the most part, you know, the successful periods are the players who people are going to be picking, because they're the ones who you think, "Oh God, what a game that was, or what a season that was, and what an important goal whoever scored." And if a team's doing well, it's likely that you are going to build that relationship with the players just naturally.
Well, and they're the sort of players that you would tell other people about as well and say, like, "Look, like, we've got Ricardo Fuller. You've never heard of him? Watch this."
Yeah.
And, like, and I guess you got some experience with doing that. So, again, another little smooth transition into sort of the next part of the podcast. As you mentioned briefly, you're a primary school teacher. I won't sort of expose where you are or anything like that, because we know how delicate that can be. One thing you told me before the show, you say you're sort of trying to convert your classes into becoming Stoke fans, right?
It's been successful on a couple of occasions. I've had, like, you know, drawings and stuff of kids who haven't been into football and stuff before, and Stoke players. And one of the kids in one of the classes I once taught ended up coming in on a Monday morning, and he'd written me a little poem, and it was like, "Roses are red, violets are blue. I hope that Stoke win this weekend for you." But it's just,
oh, brilliant,
dripping in. You know, there's little Stoke references every now and then. Like, if we're doing certain thing in maths, I won't go into the details of it, but I might have, like, Peter Crouch in, like, the problem or something like that. Or if we're doing a second description, you know, my model of it might be of a match day at the Britannia Stadium. So I might describe that. And the kids, a lot of them, you know, they have their own football teams they support, and you end up having to laugh with them, really, and they groan and they come in. I've taught a lot of Blackburn fans, for example. We've had some good games against them, and they come in on, like, the Monday morning. You can have a good joke and you can have some banter with them about the game. So I think being a Stoke fan has definitely been an interesting facet of my teaching career, and trying to brainwash the occasional fan can't really hurt. I like to think I've had some small influence on at least having some people who are following Stoke to some extent.
Even if you're not converting them into fans, like, I can imagine that you're getting this, like, little reputation there as, like, "That's a Stoke City teacher," or something like that, or, like, we know what we're getting ourselves in for when we listen to to this class today. Like,
when I moved, like, to a new school, you'd have kids just stop you in the corridor and they'd say, "Oh, Mr. Mennell, is it true you're a Stoke fan?" And I'd be like, "Yes. What of it?
And what?
Your break time indoors?"
Oh, right.
Being a Stoke fan and football generally, you know, you can have those fun little relationships kind of thing, and the talks about football, and the kids are surprisingly well informed, maybe because a lot of it's on social media, and you know, they can watch it all on YouTube, and they play FIFA and they do all the ultimate team and all that kind of thing. They know quite a lot.
I'm not surprised, like, they'll have watched highlights of like the Liverpool 6-1 just because, like, well, it was a big moment for like Steven Gerrard and stuff, and we just happened to be the team that smashed him. Little things like that. They'll be watching like reruns of the FA Cup semi-final because it's one of the, I think it's still, is it one of the biggest margins in a semi-final? I'm assuming Man City probably blew somebody away at some point, but I mean, we are becoming parts of recognised history, and we talk about sort of talking to almost, I guess in your case, every year you meet a new group of strangers, and football's just such a great way of just finding that common ground with somebody, particularly like in a school where a lot of people, a lot of young boys, I guess, particularly, will be interested in football, and it's one of the coolest things that they do. And just having that sort of connection must help you, I guess, relate to your class more in some way.
Definitely. I've had a lot of classes who, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but they've never had, like, you know, a male teacher before. So to have that, some of the boys who might not have been as into school before, having that male teacher who likes football, you know, you can talk to them about football. I've had kids who, they come in on a Monday morning and, you know, they might not want to be coming into school, or they might have stuff going on in their own lives. But then I can talk to them about how their team got on at the weekend. And it just lifts their spirits, and it's just that thing we have in common, and kind of, like I say, it builds that relationship, really. And that's what teaching's all about, you know, being able to inspire kids to want to learn and to want to be at school and to want to do the best that they can.
Oh, 100%. I remember being at school, of course, and just like thinking back to the teachers that I listened to and learned from the most. And it was the ones that weren't just repetitive robots regurgitating this information that they'd read from a textbook 10 years ago. Mm. It was the ones that sort of helped you and connected with you because they wanted to. You know, it wasn't just a job. They wanted to be your friend for the year. That goes back for all walks of life, surely. Like, it's very rare that you want to have a work colleague, for example, that you just want to be strictly professional with. You want that personal connection. In football, you want that sort of personal connection with a player. We've said these days that we probably don't get that enough. But I think back to people on the podcast before saying where they've met players, they've taken the time out to say hello, Thomas Sorensen, and giving gloves and signed pictures away for you and stuff. And it all means more when you've got that extra dimension, and football is, for some, that extra dimension.
Yeah, absolutely. One little funny story based on all that kind of thing. So each year before we have a new class, we often have what's called a transition day, where you have your new class for the day. And I always like try to plan loads of fun, really cool activities for this, you know, so they get an idea of what I'm like as a teacher, and you know, I get to know little things about them. So I planned all these amazing activities, and then I was speaking to one of the parents afterwards, and she said, bear in mind, like I said, I've done all this prep and I've got resources, I've got loads going on. She said, oh yeah, he came home and the thing he was most excited about was that at one point you ended up doing keepy uppies with a balloon. And I was like, I could have just forgotten everything I'd done, and the fact that I'm shown some small interest in football is what that kid has taken home and has made him excited about coming into school and being in my class next year.
Yeah, weird football, isn't it? Weird how people resonate with the weirdest of things. And it's not the things you expect. You said you can try and plan, and me in this podcast, you can try and plan about what we're going to talk about and stuff, but the tangents that sort of we go off about on here, and for you, sort of, I'm sure if you did that next year, no one would be interested in you keeping up a balloon. But like,
I'd probably slip and fall on my backside. Yeah.
Well, they might remember you for different reasons. Okay, so we mentioned that you're sort of from Litchfield, and I know that you go with your dad and your brother. Everyone's got a match day routine, and this is just something that I wanted to touch on in particular with you because I know what sort of happens in it. So you want to just sort of take me through it?
Yeah, so regardless of where I've been, obviously I've been in Litchfield a lot of my life, and then I went to university in Leicester, so we used to get the train over. But no matter what, we've driven, got the train, and whatever kind of time been arriving, we always go to Delilah's.
Yes.
Pretty much every game. There's the odd time we'll go into Stoke and we'll go to like the Glebe or something, but the vast majority of the time we go to Delilah's, and we get there early, and I have a meat and potato pie from downstairs. We always sit upstairs still. Downstairs, we consider in Delilah's like a little bit too posh. You know, it's been done out. They've got proper seats downstairs. We don't want any of that. They got heating and stuff. Yeah. Whereas upstairs is always like really cold. And unless you get there early, you can't get a seat. But it's beautiful for all those kind of reasons. And it's such a special place. And, you know, they've always got the early kickoff. And we just play cards and we have a pie and we have a couple of Cokes and stuff. And yeah, Delilah's. I think you mentioned you've not really had many people talk about it. I think it's a great place to go before the game.
Well, we mentioned on this podcast before about how a lot of people come from afar. Like, we've had so many people come from different parts of the country, different countries even. And we've had people complain about, even local people saying that there's just not enough around Stoke to do, and we always make a joke about Delilah's being open before and after the game, like, because that's pretty much it. And it almost gets scapegoated or ridiculed, if that's the right word, like, because it's the only thing pretty much for a Stoke fan to do around the ground. It's like, does it not get the credit it's deserved then, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think there's, you know, things that could be developed, but if you love it for what it is, then it is perfect. You're up there and you're not going there to get like a proper bar experience. You don't come to the football to get that. If you take it as somewhere you can go before the game, they've got the early kickoff. Yes, there's a sound delay, but that just makes it funny. And yes, you know, your Coke might be a bit syrupy every now and then, but this is what football's about. You know, I don't go to football games to have my pint poured like upside down or whatever it is at Spurs' new stadium. I don't care about that kind of thing. If you just after being able to sit and watch like the early kickoff and just be with, you know, your dad, your family, your mates or whoever, then what better place than somewhere that's right round the corner from your turnstile?
Yeah. Do you think it's also about the moments that you have in there, I guess, in a way? Like, I can't imagine that like there'll be some sort of life changing or defining moment that happens in there, but like that's probably the time where you spend and sit a lot with your dad and your brother and stuff. And like, I remember, so at the end of our first season in the Championship, just gone, not the old days, I obviously wasn't so fun then, because I remember sitting there with a load of Stoke fans that I knew off Twitter, and we would have never have met or have had the conversations that we did had we not sort of met up in Delilah's bar after the game. And we get a sort of cliche with Delilah's bar and like saying that we want more, and I can understand, because like, if everybody went to Delilah's, well, it just wouldn't work, would it? But like, sometimes it's not particularly how good the place is. You said about the sound delay in there, and maybe even your pints are expensive, I don't know, but like, sometimes it just doesn't matter. It's the fact that they've got a place just to facilitate you and have that moment with, because I think we've all said that we want football to be more than the 90 minutes. Like, we've said that if Stoke's doing bad and all you go to the game for is the 90, then you're going to come away miserable. But sometimes you can lose 4-0 and yet your match day is saved because of what happens before and after the whistles.
Yeah, going to football, a lot of times it's not about the games. You can remember the great goals and stuff, but it's about the routines. It's about going to Delilah's, and it's the relationships you build. It's the sitting down when I've been away at uni and I've not seen my dad and my brother for, you know, a few weeks, a month or whatever, and just catching up. It's those shared experiences and the consistency that, regardless of how the team is performing, that's always there. I remember my dad once said to me, you can change your partner, you can change your job, you can change where you live, but you can't change your team. And going to Delilah's and being a Stoke fan, that's a constant. So if you've got times of stress and upheaval and anxiety, Stoke and Delilah's is somewhere where you can go to, and it'll be the same place and it'll be the same feeling away from it all. And that's just as important as the actual sport of kicking the ball around, really.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I don't know how much more I can add to that, really. Apart from, so I don't sort of go on about current events in this podcast, because plenty of people do that already and I'd hate to step on their toes. And I think it's nice that we do something different here. Having said that, though, we're obviously in a period where we're not going to football at the moment, and it's very difficult for some people, because we mentioned how important that was, and that part of their life is now on hold, where you might spend a whole day travelling from Lichfield to Stoke, spending the early afternoon in Delilah's watching the game, maybe doing something after the game, I don't know, and then coming back, and that'll be your Saturday. And that's gone now. Do you miss it?
Yeah, well, you say that. We've tried to recreate it a couple of times. So obviously the club have been putting out on YouTube like the live streams.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We've not just sat down and watched it. The first couple of times we did it, we went all out. So we got our Stoke tops on and we imagined that we were, you know, getting to the ground a couple of hours before kickoff, and we sat and we played cards. And we had some random football like on the TV, like another game. And we were laughing. We were saying, "Do we go to the extent of like making my little brother go and sit out in the car, like he's getting the train over from Loughborough, kind of thing?" So you can try to recreate it as best you can. But yeah, of course, I miss actually going. But I suppose it will just make it all the sweeter when we do get to go again, and we do get to, you know, sit in Delilah's again, and we'll just appreciate it all the more, hopefully.
I was just going to say, has this sort of period as a whole highlighted just how important, forget Stoke, just football is, and spending that time with your family and everything about the weekend that we used to have, I guess, and the fact that that's taken away? Absence make the heart grow fonder, right?
That's it, yeah, and hopefully we'll be back there soon.
Yeah.
And if we're not, you know, the longer it goes on, the more we will appreciate it when we do get it back, and, you know, hopefully it'll be a bit of a signal of things changing.
I think things are definitely going to change after this period, for better, for worse, I don't know, but football's not going to be the same again, whether it's just a small change or a big change. But, and as I say, I don't like to speculate. I let you guys do the talking on this, and that's the way that we'll leave it. One sort of final thing before I move into sort of formalities and stuff. One thing you said before the podcast that you might like to talk about is being a football fan and how, like, football fans are defined and how you define yourself, I guess. Do you want to sort of take the stage and sort of go for that?
I think a lot of it ties into what we've been talking about, really. That being a football fan, you're not a football fan in isolation. You're a football fan because of the connections and the relationships you build with those close to you when you go to the game. You know, it's sitting in Delilah's before the game and having those shared memories, and it's a place that you come together and you talk about whatever's going on in your life. And then of course you build relationships beyond those closest to you. Like, I've had the same seat for over a decade or something now, so I kind of know a few of the people around me, and yeah, it's that shared experience where you score a winner and you end up celebrating with, you know, these people who outside of football you wouldn't know in the street. You'd walk past them, you just think it was anybody. But football has that weird way of kind of bringing people together, and you feel like a collective family against the rest of the world. And especially being from Lichfield and being surrounded by Villa fans and, you know, whoever the fans are, and being the only teacher who supports, you know, Stoke and whatever, and all the kids, you kind of build that into you. And then you're on your own, whatever, through the week, and then you go on a Saturday and suddenly you're surrounded by all these people who, that's a big part of their identity as well. So it's a weird kind of dualism, really, between having it be quite a personal thing, but that personal identity that you have a lot of the time through the week is then driven by that collective sense of passion when you come on a Saturday.
Yeah, we've said, like, how many opportunities it opens up, whether it's something for people to do, whether it's something for people to meet, whether, like, throwing yourself into football. And I know that this is the case for a lot of things, whether it's music, whether it's the arts, whether it's a different sport entirely, like, throwing yourself into football, if you do it the right way, can open up so many opportunities. Like, look at this. Like, it's a bit weird, but there we go. Like, without football, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Think about what your podcast would be. You could be doing gardening or
cooking
podcast.
I don't know what it'd be about, in fairness. I guess Lego.
Yeah.
Video games. I don't know. I'm struggling. I try and keep myself fit, but I don't preach to anybody else how to keep fit, because I'm not doing a great job of it myself, really. But yeah, football, like for me, has done so much, and I'm sure it's the same for you, and I know it's the case for so many other people as well. And as we sort of touched on before, this period just highlighted how important football is to so many people in this country and across the world, and Stoke in particular.
Yeah, I hope it's returning. I was watching the Korean League live just before this. That's just come back on the TV. That's kind of what it's come to.
Oh dear. Well, to be fair, I'm lucky because I spend a lot of time planning, recording, editing, uploading, publishing this, and then Stoke have very kindly uploaded the highlights from the Europa League season, so I'll be.
Have they? No way.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find the time to watch that at some point. So if that's not a season DVD you don't have, oh, that's a good question. So these sort of season DVDs, have you kept up that tradition or not?
Yeah, the last two seasons, understandably, there hasn't been one.
Oh,
I can't
really?
Remember. Yeah,
I guess
yeah, I
just because, well, why would you?
Exactly. So there wasn't one last year. There obviously wasn't one in the relegation season.
Oh, no.
I can't remember if there was one the season before that, to be honest, because obviously that kind of went downhill. I think there was. But yeah, hopefully they'll bring out a season review, or hopefully we'll have a season that will mean it's necessary to bring out a season review in whatever format at some point.
Oh, no. That's awful. Yeah.
It's quite sad, isn't it? Yeah.
I hope the next season does bring that sort of season review, because a season review is what it says on a tin. It's not like a celebration. This is what happened. This is our timestamp in history, good or bad. This is what happened. And you said before, like, you relied as a young Stoke fan on watching these season review DVDs to get you into it in the first place. Imagine a young Stoke fan now in your position, not from Stoke, not engaged in the area, like, without these sort of season review DVDs. Yeah, I know we've mentioned, like, media and stuff. You can go back and watch the games on YouTube, but no one's ever going to click on a Wigan 3 Stoke nil highlights when you're trying to watch it for Stoke, aren't you? But in a season review DVD, like, you obviously would, because it's part of it. And I think it's a shame that's not carried on. Oh, I'm got you now.
Yeah.
I hope somebody does it themselves.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit of a gap in the catalogue now, of course. It goes right back to, you know, 1999 or something. I've got all the DVDs, and then there's just going to be this 2-3 year gap. And that period of history will just kind of be forgotten about in a weird way. And a lot of people would say that's a good thing. But like you say, it's important in history to remember all that happened. And season review is a good way to capture that time period. And surely it can't be that expensive to produce and
to
put out there.
If anything, it makes money for them. Goodness me. Like, I mean, they must have the highlights anyway. They upload them to YouTube every week. So just bash them on a DVD. License it and make a bit of bank out of it, surely. Like, what?
That's it, yeah.
Imagine all the DVDs that would be bought right now. Like,
they'd
be sold out.
Yeah, I'm sure it is a tougher job, and I'm sure there's lots of reasons it is difficult and restraints, but I'd love to be able to put together like a proper quality season review. Well, if you think about like all the footage that gets put up on YouTube and the Twitter, like the behind the scenes stuff. You could so easily put that onto a DVD and just build up like this bank of like a really quality time snapshot. Like, to be honest, we joked about like the older ones. A lot of time, the older season reviews used to have like a little bit of extra, you know, interviews with the manager and they'd show them going go-karting or something random like that.
And
it was just cool. It was just like, you know, that little bit of extra insight into what it was like being at the club at the time. And maybe they don't do that because they see social media as the way to put that kind of thing out, but I'd like to see it personally.
I think I'm sure there is a good reason. And I hope somebody does it. Maybe this is a bit too niche of a reference, but Stoke George, if you're watching, you've dubbed over a few Stoke highlights in your time. Go and make a season review for us. Go and stick that on YouTube. A good sort of 2-hour dubs commentary of our last season. I think that'll be ace. Again, that's probably too niche a reference, but nah, some people might get that.
Yeah. I'd love it.
And I guess that sort of ties in nicely to sort of one of the final questions then. So you may have literally just answered that question. If you had the opportunity to work at Stoke City in whatever capacity you wanted, where would you want to be?
Yeah, well, as a kid, I remember sitting up in the stand and just wanted so desperately to run down and like be on the pitch. And I think as a kid, I genuinely used to think I could have an impact.
Oh,
like,
I think really we all did, didn't we?
Misguidedly. Yeah. I think like, oh, how's he got past him? I reckon I could have tackled him or whatever. But then, you know, growing up, I think, like you say, I've kind of covered it really. I'm sure it's a really tough job and there are lots of restraints, but to be given like license to really put together a quality season review, I think brings it full circle for me personally, because that was such an important thing for me and my formation as a Stoke fan, really. So to be given the opportunity to do that would be pretty special.
We talked about how sort of fans doing club media and stuff would be great, just because it's got that little bit of an edge to it. Yeah, I think that's a good answer. Long live season review DVDs. I think we've talked about a lot that we were going to talk about. Unless there's anything else, if there's anything else you want to discuss or say, any shout outs you want to give to anybody, this is the bit where I sort of give the stage to you. Off you go, mate. Talk about what you want.
I don't think there's anything particularly pressing, to be honest. I mentioned to you before that obviously I'm recording this and I'm here with my little brother and my dad, and my dad has been banging on at me and my little brother to get on this podcast for so long. He says we've got, you know, a few little niche things to talk about. So I've actually tried to keep it a secret from him. He's probably heard me by this point. My little brother was trying to distract him, but he's probably listening even right now. But I've really tried to keep it a surprise for him, because I know he subscribes to the podcast. So the idea of him kind of scrolling down and then my name popping up, you know, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, in that case, I'd better stitch your list together, and before he puts two and two together and goes, oh, hang on, he's next. Bad play to you for finding this podcast, because I think I mentioned this off recording. That's not a word. Off air. Thank you. Well done, mate. Yeah. the fact that, as you as a teacher, you don't have social media, and it still amazes me that people are finding this. I thought that the only reason why some people listen to this was because I told them to, because I know them. But the fact that there's actual people I don't know out there, strangers, that listen to this and actively encourage people to come on the podcast, I'm really grateful, actually, because I think we've said, me and you never uttered a word to each other before this. We didn't know about each other, but
yeah, that's it.
Like we said about football bringing people together, I think it's fantastic. Like I'm really humbled, genuinely, by the amount of people that sort of come on and volunteer to come on this show and say their piece about Stoke, and the fact that I'm able to sort of extract that and broadcast it is like really humbling for me, genuinely. So thank you Dad, thank you brother for tuning in and getting yourselves involved. And
no, Ben, thank you.
Why did I not know that was coming? Oh man, goodness me. Have you been waiting all episodes to say that?
Yeah, it's come into my mind the last 10 minutes or so that the podcast might crop up.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, well, I tell you what, I don't know whether it is going to be that or not, but there's one final question I've got for you then, mate. And you may have thought of something already, or you may have just happened to have come across something on this podcast. I don't know what that might have been, but I'd like you to describe your Stoke City story in three words for the title, please, mate.
A few things kind of bouncing around my head.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to go for, given the circumstances, and it kind of links really to my story in that it's the connection that football brings, but I'm going to go for surprise for Dad, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I like it. It's nice that, like, something that we and I have made together, like, is it surprise for somebody? Like, oh, bless. Like, I might have actually made someone's day.
Like, yeah, you definitely will. Yeah. Like,
oh. Oh, man, that's nice. Well, I tell you what, you've made a lot of people's days, mate, I'm sure, just by coming on and talking about your story. I really appreciate it. Like we've said before, like we've not uttered a word to each other before this podcast, but I feel like, you know, I know you ever so well now. You've talked about how you've sort of grown up with Stoke and all that time as you being a teacher and trying to get involved with, like, making new Stoke fans and Delilahs and... honestly, I think it's absolutely brilliant. Thank you ever so much for giving up your time and coming on the show, mate. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. And you've made it really easy. You've made it... It's been a pleasure to spend however long it's been. I've no idea. Just talking about Stoke. So if anybody out there is sitting there thinking, you know, they've got people pestering them, they're thinking, should I go on? Just do it. It's easier than you think it's going to be.
There you go. I think Pete sort of took the words out of my mouth there. With that, that does close file 27 of the WowWowWow files. Yeah, I really do need people like you to come on and do this if I'm to make more of these. Like I say, Pete was pestered, by the sounds of it, by his dad to come on and do this, and it's the fact that he was sort of proactive enough to reach out. It doesn't take a lot. It's just like the form on the website is literally just your name, your email address, and what stuff you might like to talk about on a show. It doesn't have to be in great detail. Kind of be as much detail as you want, but literally just make me aware of who you are, because there's so many Stoke fans out there that I can't possibly know everybody, and there's so many good stories out there. Pete today, like, I spoke to him, and he's not a journalist, he doesn't work for the club or anything like that, but look at how much good conversation we've had over the last few hours, and it's just as good as any. And some people say, like, oh, I don't know how much I'd have to talk about. Me and Pete have been talking for an hour and 45 minutes now. Come on and do this thing. Like, you honestly surprise yourself. I surprise myself of how I'm able to keep people going. I don't know how I do it, but then I think I've got a reputation of making podcasts too long. So Maybe I should start cutting this down right now. So yeah, if you want to come on like Pete and create your file, head to the website at thewowwowfiles.com. I can understand that if you don't want to come on the podcast, that's absolutely fine. But if you want to hear more, subscribe on your favourite podcast platform. Go back and listen to the previous ones if you haven't already, because they are sort of timeless. Like, it doesn't matter whether you listen to this a day after it's come out, a year after it's come out, or 10 years after it's come out. It's a timestamp in a way for people, and it's still relevant. Even those ones that I made a year ago this week when the podcast come out, it still makes sense. So if you are in lockdown and you need something to binge on that isn't a Netflix series like Tiger King, come on and have a go with this. But most importantly, tell your friends about the show. It's how it spreads. And I've said before that if you tell someone and they like the show and listen to it, they might know somebody that would be perfect to come on the show. Nigel Johnson came on the show just because someone told him about it. So, you never know how it comes about. So, if you did enjoy it and you think other people might as well, please share it. Like, it would mean a lot to me. If you didn't, then share it anyway and say how bad it is. That's fair enough. But yeah, come and find us on social media at the YYY Files, or send an email to the YYYfiles@mail.com if you've got any questions. All links in that are in the description of this podcast. That just leaves me to say one more time, thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank
I'm
you
not
very much.
The line again.
No, thank you. Oh dear. No, thank you very much for listening. Until the next one. But don't forget, it could be your file one day. Visit Nita40.org.
Pantomime.